This is Audible.
Podium Publishing presents The Terra Nova Chronicles. Publishers Pack. Books 1 and 2 of The Terra Nova Chronicles. Written by Richard Fox and Josh Hayes. Performed by Luke Daniels. Book 1. Terra Nova. Chapter 1. The hardest part was the waiting. Director Ken Hale stood in front of the captain's chair on the Enduring Spirits Bridge, watching as his crew took in last-minute reports from the small colony fleet about to jump with him to Terra Nova, 25,000 light-years away in the Canis Major star cluster beyond the galaxy's edge. After years of prep work for the mission, the final countdown before the wormhole jump filled Hale with a sense of foreboding, an oncoming dread worse than what he had ever felt during years at war. Earth filled the bottom half of the bridge's viewport, where city lights traced along the Mediterranean Sea. Venice and Athens had been rebuilt in the past decades, but the wide swaths of darkness across Europe reminded him just how far humanity had to go before the damage from the Ember War was repaired. Along the edge of the viewport, enormous basalt-colored spikes poked into view. The Enduring Spirit and the colony fleet sat in the center of the crucible, a giant gate in the shape of a crown of thorns that would send them all to Terra Nova in the next few minutes. There would be no return for the Enduring Spirit, her crew, or the rest of their small fleet. They would step beyond the edge of the galaxy, and that would be the last any of them ever saw of home. What lay ahead wasn't what bothered him, it was what he was forgetting. Despite years of concerted effort to prepare this colony mission, choosing the crew, overseeing the special construction of the Enduring Spirit, procuring everything the colony would need, and spares, and the endless meetings, he still didn't feel ready. And he was in charge.
"Sir, good news," said a crewman named Hugh as she spun around in her chair. "The old forge found their heavy metal cargo in the tertiary foundry computer cores."
Hale breathed a sigh of relief.
"Where were they?"
Hale asked.
"Right where they're supposed to be."
Marie Hale walked down the ramp behind the command deck and handed a data slate to her husband.
"Deep in the bays, underneath 15 other containers that were a pain to move. Someone screwed up the last manual count and the old forge's entire crew were jumping through their ass to make sure we weren't leaving Earth with a foundry that couldn't produce anything once we got to Terra Nova."
"Every time the fleet does a manual count, we get screw-ups like this."
Hale swiped a fingertip over the slate, noting all the green status indicators.
"And every time we do a manual, we find something the computers missed,"
Marie said. "Which is why I'm so glad you insisted we do them." Hale looked up at the viewport, where the great basalt spikes of the crucible shifted against each other.
"I canceled the emergency resupply," Marie said. "Not that the Ceres station could have gotten it to us in time anyway."
"The boy's all right?" Hale asked quietly.
"Jerry and Elias are in our quarters. It's not like a crucible jump is anything special for them,"
she said.
"They're more excited about this than you are."
"They're teenagers. They have no responsibilities."
Hale felt the screen on his forearm buzz with an incoming call.
"It's Keeper. We must be getting close. Start the final checks for me."
"You have to say something to the fleet. You're the director,"
Marie said.
"You think I listened to you rehearse for hours and now you're going to pawn off?"
"I've got my speech ready, Marie. Let me check with Keeper and make sure something hasn't gone horribly wrong before I give a speech about our grand adventure and then have to announce a delay minutes later. I never liked the Marines' hurry-up-and-wait mentality. I'm not going to be the leader that tells everyone to hurry up and wait even more." She gave his arm a squeeze and walked toward the workstations.
"Crew, report final checks from all stations,"
she said, using the commanding tone of one who'd led void fighters into battle. The sailors responded in a well-practiced sequence, and Hale felt a bit of confidence return. Hale tapped the incoming call icon on his forearm screen and lifted a holoprojection off his arm. The head and shoulders of a woman with a fit body but elderly face appeared.
"Keeper, you've good news?" Hale asked.
"Do you want the long answer with quantum state algorithms and wormhole loci or the crib notes?"
the woman asked.
"Pretend I'm still the dumb Marine you used to know,"
Hale said.
The Crucible's working overtime to form the wormhole. This is the second time we've ever seen a fleet so far with a single jump, but the gravity tides are just as the Qarish promised. Sending you through at zero velocity isn't optimal, but it's the only way the math works, she said.
My ships are glorified lumps in space, Hale said. We have enough engines to get us into Terra Nova orbit and then to shuttle everything down in pieces. Just get us there, Keeper.
Say hello to your brother Jared for me, Keeper said. I met him a few times.
She touched her face, and fractals spread out across her cheek.
I'm not sure how he'd react to me now.
Lots of news to pass on. Hale looked over at his wife and thought of their boys, one of whom they'd named after his brother. That we survived the war with the Zaros will be the headline.
We won that war, and now we've got to win the peace that comes after, Keeper said. No matter what happens back here, I'm glad that humanity's got an ace in the hole with Terra Nova. A colony in uninhabited space far beyond the reach of an enemy here. Good luck and fair winds, Hale. I hope our math with the Crucible is correct and that I might get to say hello to your descendants someday.
Thank you, Keeper.
You've got 8 minutes.
She cocked her head to one side.
Not sure if your personnel transfer will make it. Excuse me, I have to concentrate for this last part.
The hologram clicked off. Personnel transfer? Hale looked over at Marie. His wife held up the data slate and pointed to a blinking yellow box.
Your spiel,
Marie said.
I'll handle this last emergency.
Hale's jaw clenched, but he decided to let her deal with the issue. Choosing Marie as his executive officer had been the easiest and best decision he'd made since he'd asked her to marry him. He motioned to the ensign at the communications station and straightened out the utility uniform he wore over his thin void suit beneath. It never felt right being on a void ship and not in his strike marine armor, but here he was. A whistle blew the notes for general call through the speakers. A lens lit up on the ceiling and Hale cleared his throat. His image went to every screen in the fleet.
Terra Nova Expedition. This is Director Hale. In a few minutes, we will embark on our mission beyond the galaxy's edge, to a brave new world that will be our new home. All of you aboard the Enduring Spirit, Old Forge, New Phoenix, Acme, Vesuvius, and the Standish,
he remembered not to grumble the last ship's name,
volunteered for this chance, and you are amongst the best humanity can send to sow our future far beyond the Milky Way. We leave Earth behind forever, but the embers of what survived the war with the Zaros remain. We carry the torch to Terra Nova, where we will join those who went before us and build our new home.
Marie leaned over a workstation, speaking low and forcefully to someone on the other end of a transmission. He recalled the rest of the speech, then decided it could be left to a footnote in history.
All ships secure for transit. Hail out.
He stepped away from the camera and ignored the applause from the bridge crew as he hurried toward Marie.
If you're not aboard in the next 8 minutes, you're not coming. It's as simple as that.
Marie shook her head.
What personnel transfer? Hale asked.
Byers, our Pathfinder team chief got cold feet and pulled his packet this morning.
Marie said.
His girlfriend, who's not on this mission, found out she's pregnant. That also happened this morning. So I put in for a replacement from Pathfinder Command and she still hasn't arrived yet.
Byers dropped?
Hale's hand went to his forearm screen, then he looked up at the mission clock, only minutes until the wormhole formed.
Why didn't anyone?
Because I'm the XO and you can't make every single decision, Marie said, and when this all blew up, you are doing a photo op with the media and President Garrett. You're welcome.
Who did you pick? Why did it take so long for anyone to...
Marie passed him a data slate, face down, as she chewed her bottom lip. Hale knew something was up.
Marie?
He turned the slate over and saw the picture of the Enduring Spirit's final crew member.
No.
Hale shook his head.
Not her. Not in a million years. Send her back.
She has the skill set, and we're not going to get someone else to replace Byers,
Marie said evenly.
I'll train someone else personally.
Hale reached for the microphone on the station behind his wife, but she grabbed his wrist.
I made the decision for the good of the mission, she said.
Hale stood up and she let him go.
We need her.
Hale glanced at the plot for a mule transport, closing on the Enduring Spirit, then back to the mission clock.
It doesn't matter, Hale said. She'll never make it in time.
Warrant Officer Catherine Carson held a yellow and black handle attached to the side of the mule's open cargo bay as the ship banked to one side. Her maglocked boots kept her secured to the deck, but she almost lost her grip during the maneuver. It had been a long time since she'd been in the void, and it would take some time for her sea legs to come back. Below, distant Earth came into view, the planet's blue oceans, white clouds, and green land, brilliant and clear.
"Goodbyes don't get much better than this," Carson told herself.
She smiled and squeezed her other hand into a fist. After years of waiting for a chance to escape her cubicle in the Camelback Mountain military headquarters, today had been her day. A colony mission, and not just any colony, the last ticket to Terra Nova. An alert chimed, and a communications request came through on her helmet's heads-up display. The mule pilot.
"Carson, go,"
she said.
"Chief, our flight path is still green, but we're down to the wire here," the pilot said.
Carson leaned out of the opening and looked to the right. The Ajax, a massive foundry ship, came into view.
"What wire? We're almost there."
Carson sucked air through her teeth. The mission clock on her HUD was ticking down, and the mule hadn't even begun its braking maneuver yet.
"I've got 5 minutes to land, disembark you and your gear, then launch and get clear before the wormhole forms," the pilot said. "I know you're excited about this Terra-whatever place, but I'm getting short and I want to live on a colony I've actually visited before. And liked. Same with my crew. We're cutting it too close on scrubbing this mission."
"No, wait.
Carson pulled telemetry data from the mule and put it up on her HUD.
"I don't care about my gear. You don't..."
She did some quick calculations in her head.
"Heck, you don't even have to land. Can you do a slingshot?"
"You're insane," the pilot said.
"If you were a mediocre pilot, I'd be suicidal," Carson said. "But since you've been in for so long, I bet you can do the maneuver. Easy. Yes?"
"I need clearance," he said.
Carson could almost feel the pilot rolling his eyes over the channel. Unlocking her boots, she went to a storage locker, pulled out a jetpack, and slipped her arms into the straps. The pack tightened against her shoulders, and she took out 2 hand thrusters. Both gave off a spritz of propellant as she pulled the triggers.
"Carson,"
a woman's voice came through her helmet.
"This is Hale. A slingshot dock at that velocity you're moving is at the very edge of what's survivable. Theoretically survivable."
"I'm aware of the risks, ma'am," Carson said. "But the enduring spirit is at a standstill. This'll be easy."
Carson hurried back to her spot at the edge of the open cargo bay and locked her boots to the deck.
"This will not be easy," she thought, "at all." "You've done a slingshot insertion before?"
Marie Hale asked.
"Yes, ma'am."
Carson crouched slightly and checked the charge on her jump pack. She didn't bother to add that she'd done the maneuver only once before, in training.
"Abort if you come in too hot," Marie said. "Rather have you Flying Dutchman for the Crucible to pick up after we leave than a smudge on my hull. Understand me, Pathfinder?"
"Loud and clear,"
Carson said. Carson bit her lip. The fact that it had been Marie Hale and not Director Hale on the line unnerved her slightly. She'd assumed after she'd been cleared to join the mission that Hale, the founder and first commander of the Pathfinder Corps, had finally forgiven her for what had happened aboard the Belisarius, or at least finally looked past it. When she'd seen the orders and a Hale had signed off on them, she'd assumed it had been Ken, but now she realized it could have easily been Marie Hale. Ken Hale's words from her court-martial echoed in her mind.
"Your reckless behavior has cost the Pathfinder Corps greatly, and you have put a black mark on this great organization, one that won't be forgotten quickly. My only hope is that someday you'll have the opportunity to redeem yourself."
"Later," she told herself. "You can deal with that later."
Carson punched up another number on her display. The range between the mule and the colony ship was just over 3 kilometers. She did some quick math in her head and then switched her suit's IR over to the mule's channel.
"You guys sure you don't want to come along?"
"Lady, it's bad enough we got shanghaied into this in the first place," the pilot said. "If you think we're going with you, you got another thing coming."
"Just point me in the right direction," Carson said.
"I've got this. I've definitely got this."
A tinge of fear that ran down her spine and into her knees told her otherwise. The pilot let out a sigh.
"This is insane. Hold on."
The star field outside the mule swarm as the ship flipped over and the massive, blocky structure of the Enduring Spirit came into view. A small, very small, shuttle bay was open on its wide flank. At this distance, she could just make out the rows of transports and service vessels arrayed in orderly rows on either side of a long strip of open deck. Her mind told her the runway was at least 30 feet across, but her eyes told a different story. If she was off by just a few feet...
"Slingshot on my mark," the pilot said. "What about your stuff?"
Carson eyed the crate strapped to the deck, her name stenciled along the side of each. Her entire life packaged into 3 boxes. Was there anything inside worth missing the trip to Terra Nova?
"Well, they did tell me to pack light," she said. "It's all yours."
"Are all Pathfinders as crazy as you?" the pilot asked.
"Mostly."
"Good to know. Hang on back there. Release in 30 seconds, the pilot said.
Carson began her breathing exercise to slow her heart rate, but despite years of using the technique, her heart pounded in her chest. She was no stranger to EVA, but working through the vector dynamics of depositing an object with an impressive amount of momentum onto a stationary landing pad was above and beyond the normal call of Pathfinder duty, especially when she was the moving object, and the slightest miscalculations would end her trip as a smudge against the Spirit's hull.
15 seconds.
"Do I need to remind you to use the anti-grav thrusters?" Carson asked. "Rather not get cooked when you punch off."
"Oops,"
the pilot muttered. The sound of switches clicking did not fill her with confidence. She crouched down, mentally preparing herself for what she was about to do. Everything but Enduring Spirit's open hangar bay faded into an unfocused haze. Either way, this stunt would put her name in the books. Whether as an outstanding feat of bravery or a cautionary tale was yet to be determined.
"Okay, reverse thrust on my mark. 3, 2,
Carson unlocked her mag boots.
1.
Carson activated her jetpack and went flying into the void.
"She did what?" Hale jumped from his seat. "A slingshot? From that distance? No one can be that reckless."
"I have a feed from external sensors,"
announced Hugh, Enduring Spirit's navigation officer.
"Let me see it."
Every display on the bridge lit up, all showing the same image, a shot of Spirit's outer hull against a backdrop of stars, and a mule rapidly decelerating. It took a moment for Hale to pick up the tiny speck of light flying through the void, but as soon as he found it, his blood began to boil. The bridge crew watched in silence as the figure crossed the gulf. Every few seconds, small jets of vapor shot out from the pack as the Pathfinder made minor course corrections.
"She's coming in way too fast,"
Commander Edison said.
"Alert Crucible Search and Rescue," Hale barked. "She'll either overshoot the ship and go Dutchman or..."
He stopped, not wanting to think about the other option.
"Get a medical team to Bay 2 just in case."
A two-tone alert sounded on the bridge that would echo throughout the ship. Hale looked at his wife.
"This is why I wouldn't have approved Carson," he said. "She's just as arrogant as ever. I can't believe her..."
"Gal?"
Marie asked, reminding Hale of her old fighter call sign and the inherent play on words tied to her French heritage. Hale checked the mission clock. 4 minutes, 37 seconds.
"I don't want to christen this voyage with a Pathfinder smashed against the hull," Hale said.
"Nothing's gone wrong,"
Marie said.
"Yet. I'll give you a yet."
She crossed her arms and watched intently as Carson closed on the Enduring Spirit. Carson tweaked her course again, manipulating the grav lining in her boots to change her flight vector and releasing spurts of air from the propellant cans to nudge her onto the course her HUD displayed. She focused on the colony ship's open bay doors and the deck beyond. Both were approaching fast. Too fast, she realized.
"Bad," she said as her HUD flashed velocity warnings. "Very bad."
She checked her trajectory again, then kicked her heels toward the Spirit and activated the jetpack. She groaned as the rockets ignited, the sudden pull feeling like a giant had snatched her off the ground. The straps dug into her chest as the jetpack cut her forward momentum. On her HUD, Carson appeared as a red dot, the colony ship a green rectangle, both connected by a broken orange line. Her course was dead on, but at her current speed, she'd shoot right through the bay and become so much paste on the far bulkhead. The maintenance crew would be mopping her up for weeks. She typed a command into her wrist terminal, trying to increase the jetpack's thrust, but the rockets were already firing at full capacity. She brought up the jetpack's command settings and began scrolling through the menus. Come on, come on! There! She found a function surrounded by hazard warnings and hit the command. A secondary confirmation box appeared. Yes, goddammit! Override! She shouted, jamming her finger down on the button. The jetpack's thrusters roared, and her legs stretched out straight as vector mechanics played hell with her body. Warning chimes sounded as her suit's integrity wavered. Heat seeped through the protective plates on her legs, and she could practically smell her skin burning. The jetpack's fuel level dropped alarmingly fast, and moments later the thrusters deactivated. Flipping over, she came face to face with the spirit and saw that she was on a direct course for the hull a few feet over the open bay. She pointed the hand thrusters straight up and squeezed the handles, blasting propellant nudging her down. She passed through the force field, separating the hangar bay from the vacuum of space. Her left leg hit the edge of the bay and a bolt of pain made her wince. As soon as she crossed the threshold, Carson realized that the ship's artificial gravity field was active, and she plummeted to the deck. She slapped the emergency release on her jetpack, and it smashed against the ceiling as she swung her feet forward and tried to manage a slide along the deck. The back wall grew closer, looking firm and unforgiving. Carson managed to right herself just before she hit and bounced hard off her back, knocking the breath from her lungs. She landed again and spun around, feet facing the void as she slid across the deck. Carson activated the grav plates in her boots and grunted as they tried to adhere to the deck. She gritted her teeth. It felt like the boots were going to rip her legs free of her body. She craned her head to look around and saw the bulkhead racing toward her. Slapping her hands against the deck, she tried to grab anything to slow her down, but it was no use as she slid across the deck like it was ice. A panel popped open from the floor near the rear of the deck, and a wall of dark webbing shot up between her and the oncoming bulkhead. She skipped off the deck and hit the emergency barricade designed to stop out-of-control fighters, the net barely giving as she crashed into it. Her body felt like it was in a vice as she lost her forward momentum. She opened her mouth to scream but was cut off as she bounced off the net and slammed into the deck. She barely had time to register that the webbing had saved her life when it retracted with a rustle of reinforced fabric and servos. She rolled to a stop. The large lighting panels on the bay's ceiling spinning around as her inner ear kept turning. A crewman appeared, concern and disbelief spread across his face.
Holy shit, that was crazy! Are you dead?
Carson popped open her visor and got a whiff of burnt carbon alloy. She coughed as air filled her lungs again and pain throbbed down her left calf.
I hurt too much to be dead, she said, grimacing. I think something might be...
She bent her left knee and white-hot pain shot down her leg, like someone rammed a phantom blade into her shin. She gritted her teeth against the pain.
Son of a bitch!
Ignoring the pain, she tried to sit up, but the crewman put a hand on her shoulder.
Whoa there, Chief! Let's stay right there until the doc gets here. Probably want to make sure that leg and a death wish aren't your only problems.
She clenched her jaw against the pain and glared up at the crewman. He couldn't have been more than 20 or 21. His face looked as if it had never needed a razor's touch, his light brown hair trimmed high and tight. She looked at the nameplate on his chest and saw the same winged badge Carson wore.
Determination and drive isn't quite the same thing as a death wish, Pathfinder Nunez.
The man frowned and cocked his head to one side.
Hold on, you're Carson?
He paused, looking over his shoulder, then lowered his voice slightly.
Carson from the Belisarius Carson?
Carson hesitated for a moment, trying to read his thoughts through his large brown eyes, then said,
That's right.
She knew right then that she might leave Earth and the rest of the Milky Way behind with the Enduring Spirit, but her past would travel with her. Another man appeared carrying a medkit. His dark beard was neatly trimmed, his matching hair combed to one side. Even through the overalls, Carson could tell the medic was built like a brick house. Without a word, the medic raised a hand over her head, and the fingertips of his gauntleted hand lit up. He ran the scanner down the length of her body, pausing to let the scanner get a deeper reading on her left leg. After several moments, the scanner lights on his fingers dimmed, and he shook his head. The winged rod and two snakes of a caduceus badge were just below the Pathfinder wings on his chest.
Saw your landing, ma'am. I know the Colonial Administration requested motivated personnel for this mission, the medic said, but there is such a thing as too motivated.
I like to make an impression.
You got a transverse fracture of your left tibia. The The pain you feel on your back and the rest of your legs comes from simple contusions.
Broken leg and a load of bruises, Nunez said. Doc Moretti had to go through 2 years of trauma school to figure that out.
A fact that you should appreciate after I patched you up after that bad landing you had on New Fredericksburg. Or would you have rather I left that tree branch in your abdomen?
Moretti glanced from the holo screen on his gauntlet to Carson.
I need a litter to move you to sickbay. Injuries are relatively minor, but you should still have a full exam.
Now hear this,
boomed through the speakers.
Now hear this, crucible jump in T-minus 3 minutes.
I don't need a full workup, Carson said, and the med bay will be mad at us after the jump. You can fix a simple break, can't you?
The side of Moretti's face twitched, like the thought of helping her disgusted him, but he pulled a hypo-injector off his gauntlet and pressed it against Carson's neck.
This'll help with the pain for a minute. Nunez, help me get her to our locker room and I'll work on her.
Carson grunted as the pain suppressant flowed into her veins, relaxing her body. There was a certain abruptness to the sergeant's tone, not quite disrespectful, but definitely not friendly. She lay back on the deck as the anesthetic spread through her body, looking at the panel in the floor where the emergency barricade that had saved her life had deployed.
That was some quick thinking with the arrestor. Whoever was behind that deserves some big kudos.
Nunez shrugged and turned his palms to the air. Seemed like the same thing to do, and I always wanted to hit that big red button. He helped her up and slung one of her arms over his shoulders. She wobbled and managed to get her broken leg off the deck.
Could have hit her with the happy juice after I got her up, Doc, Nunez said.
Moretti looked at the dent in the ceiling where Carson's jetpack had struck it and the many broken pieces of the pack strewn across the deck.
The squids can take care of that when they get off action stations, Moretti said.
Medical emergency, Nunez nudged Carson forward. Let's get out of here before some petty officer shows up and gets all pissed off.
A two-tone alert echoed through the expanse of cargo bay. The lights blinked from white to amber, and a moment later, Ken Hale's voice boomed over the ship's comm.
All crew, prepare for jump.
Carson looked back through the open bay doors and got a final glimpse of Earth as the reinforced doors shut with a clang. A white haze crept across her vision, and she felt Nunez's grip on her shoulder tighten. The wormhole materialized around them, drowning them in a brilliant white light that pierced through her shut eyes. Second thoughts about her decision to join the second Terra Nova colony mission came to her, but she forced the useless doubts away. She and the fleet were about to leave home forever. Her path was set. Outside, the crucible's thorns twisted against each other, writhing like an undersea creature in the tide. A wide plane of white light filled the center of the Great Crown, and the Enduring Spirit, her sister ships and 40,000 souls, vanished from the galaxy. Chapter 2. The brilliant light faded away after a heartbeat. The nausea, however, remained. Hale clenched the arms of his chair, gritting his teeth against the stomach-turning sensation. Traveling the galaxy might be instant, but it wasn't without cost. He took another second to compose himself, from both the queasiness in his stomach and his simmering anger at Carson's arrival. He made a note to have a long conversation with Carson once they were safely in orbit. For now, Hale had more pressing issues to see to. Ahead, a small marble of blue and white hung against a backdrop of stars. If Hale hadn't known any different, he could have been looking at Earth. The resemblance was uncanny. But the resemblance to the solar system ended there. A gossamer green and white nebula stretched across the right side of the viewport, and a single bright moon orbited the planet, smaller than Luna and covered in snow and ice.
All stations, report in sequence, Hale said.
All ships made transit and are reporting green across the board, Commander Edison said.
Telemetry and positioning are good, Director Hale, Hugh said. Astrogation is running a pulsar triangulation, but we've never done one beyond the Milky Way.
Second round of status reports from the fleet, sir,
Figueroa said.
The old Forge reports some power spikes in our drive systems, but it's minor.
Minor but unexpected, Hale said. Tell Captain Jennings I want regular updates.
Aye, sir.
If that was the height of their problems for today, Hale would gladly take it. Murphy hadn't smiled on him in a long time, which meant that he was due to show up at any moment. A trip of this scale and distance was bound to attract the old law's attention.
Internal systems are green across the board, sir,
Hugh reported. All decks reporting no issues. External sensors coming online.
Hale felt fingers slipping into his and looked up to see his wife smiling at him.
Beautiful, isn't it?
He asked, nodding to the planet in the distance. Marie nodded.
Welcome home, my love. I can't wait to see the look on Jared's face when we show up on his doorstep. Talk about unexpected guests, she said.
He wanted me to come on the first mission, Hale said, but I wouldn't leave my Marines. And we were a bit preoccupied with the war against the Zaros when Jared left.
What does surprise him more? That you're here or that you're here with a wife and two sons?
Hale snorted. We'll have to wait and see.
Hmm. That's unusual.
Edison murmured from his station to Hale's right.
What's that, Edison?
Hale took his hand away from Marie and got out of his chair.
We can detect the colony's beacon, but it isn't responding to any of my pings.
Is it offline?
Hale asked. The commander shook his head slowly, typing on his console.
No, I'm getting a solid connection, but no acknowledgement.
Hale tapped a command into the terminal next to Edison, scrolling through the sensor data flooding into the Spirit's computers. After a second, he found what he was looking for and grunted.
That's impossible.
There aren't any signals coming from the planet, not even IR. Figueroa, run a diagnostic.
Working on it, sir,
the communications tech said, tying back her long black hair. It wasn't strictly military regulation, but their mission wasn't a strictly military one. She began working the problem, chewing on her bottom lip. A minute later, she looked up, her face a mask of confusion.
Nothing, sir. Not even a latent HD signal. It's like the entire planet is on radio silence.
Damn it, not today,
Hale thought. He felt his blood pressure rising as bad memories of the first days of the Ember War and an uninhabited Earth came back.
But the systems are in place?
As far as I can tell, yes. It's just no one's using them. Keeper did send us to the right place?
Marie asked.
We weren't redirected to some colony still in the initial phases of being settled, were we?
Hale frowned. Her suggestion was the most obvious answer, and one that would mean the entire mission was a bust.
We're in the Canis Major Star Cluster, Hugh said. Pulsar Spot has us in the Terra Nova system.
Then why aren't they talking to us? Hale asked. The first mission knew a second phase was coming. The window for making the jump only opens every few decades. I could believe one or two systems failing, but all of them doesn't seem likely.
A threat from beyond this star system? Commander Edison said. If there's another civilization a few stars away broadcasting on radio, the colonists might not want to advertise that they're here.
I thought the Karesh swore this dwarf galaxy was uninhabited, Marie said, that there would be no threats to the colony.
That is what they said,
Hale said, trying hard to keep his frustration from boiling over.
Okay, forget communications for a minute. It's been 15 years. There must be settlements. Are we picking up any signs of life on the planet? Where's the ship they came in, the Christophorus?
Hugh shook her head.
We're too far out for our scans to be effective. I might be able to bounce a radar pulse off the moon, see if we hit anything.
Hale shook his head.
No, that'll light us up like a Christmas tree. If there are hostiles around, I don't want to give away our position any more than we already have. What about orbitals?
No orbital traffic either, Hugh said. Wait, I'm picking up a slight signal relay from one of the moons. It's weak, but it's there. I'm going to run it through the scrubbers and see if I can clean it up.
I don't like this,
Marie whispered so only Hale could hear.
You're not the only one, Hale said.
Got it,
Hugh said.
The signal's extremely weak, but the transponder code matches what we have in the computer. It's the Christophorus, the old colony ship's holding in a stationary orbit at the Lagrange point on the far side of the planet.
Okay, Hale said. Set a course for Terra Nova and bring the fleet into high orbit. Keep trying to raise the colony over direct comms. Set the fleet to infrared laser communications. Everything goes ship to ship, no wideband frequencies.
Let's assume that if anyone's here, they didn't notice the giant wormhole that brought us,
Marie said.
It'll take some time for the fleet's drives to warm up, sir,
Edison said.
Even then, we're at essentially zero velocity. It'll take 18 hours for the Spirit to make orbit, less for the smaller ships.
Understood. Let's get them spun up and get moving en masse, Hale said. Now is not the time to spread out.
He paused as another thought struck him and beat a fist against a workstation. He needed reconnaissance, intelligence, and boots on Terra Nova to tell him what had happened down there before he sent his fleet of unarmed ships into orbit. He needed pathfinders.
Get me Carson.
Chapter 3. With a little help from Nunez and Moretti, Carson limped toward the Pathfinder's locker. The meds had kept the pain down to a dull throbbing, but every time she stepped on the deck with her good leg, she felt a sting of pain through her broken bone and a new ache from the bruises up and down her back. The hatch opened just as Nunez reached forward to tap the door controls. A tall, well-built man in his late 40s stepped out into the corridor, then stopped, obviously surprised at their arrival. His salt-and-pepper hair was cut into a severe high and tight, and his angular jaw was clean-shaven, an oddity for most experienced Pathfinders. His uniform appeared freshly pressed, and the Master Sergeant chevrons on his collar seemed to glisten in the bay's light.
"Well," he said, stepping back out of the way, "this explains why Nunez and Moretti weren't at their assigned stations after the jump. Welcome to the Enduring Spirit, Chief Carson. I didn't think you were going to make it."
"That seems to be the common thread around here today," Carson said as the two men helped her through the hatch.
Inside, wire mesh cages lined the walls, all filled with equipment. Six lockers were open, each containing a suit of void-slash-terrestrial environmental armor and a weapon rack. Carson smiled. She hadn't been in proper Pathfinder country for a long time. Moretti guided her to a long table in the middle of the room and helped her up. She winced as her broken leg dangled off the edge.
"Master Sergeant Jason West," the older man said, extending a hand. "Team Sergeant, good to have you aboard. Losing Byers right at the end surprised us all. Looks like you got a little banged up on arrival."
"Good to meet you, Sergeant. Nothing like showing up last to the party. And this," she waved a hand at her leg, "is nothing."
"If she'd hit any harder, it would have ruptured the artery."
Moretti grabbed a small case from an open locker and set it down next to her. He removed a gleaming set of surgical probes and snapped them onto his gauntlet. Tiny scopes peeked out of the attachment, and light glinted off laser scalpels.
"You can treat her here?" West asked.
"Simple fracture."
Instruments whirred along his gauntlet.
"I could treat this in the dark, up to my knees in mud while getting shot at."
"He's the modest one on the team," Nunez said. Carson looked away from her leg as Moretti put on a visor from the case. A HUD popped onto the glass, detailing the physiology of her broken bone and surrounding tissue. She felt him grab her by the ankle and then pressure against her calf as the probes cut their way through the vac suit. A wave of cold spread across her leg. Then she felt nothing at all from her injury.
"Sergeant West," Carson said, "I see six lockers, but only four of us. Are we the entire team?"
"Negative, ma'am," West said. "Birch and Popoff are working on an equipment inventory on Deck 7. Speaking of..."
He looked at Nunez. The junior Pathfinder grumbled and hurried out a back door. Carson ignored the smell of cauterized flesh as Moretti continued his field surgery.
"Our gear is squared away," West said. "As such, the chief petty officer of the ship recognized that we'd have a few warm bodies standing around after the jump and isn't a fan of idleness."
He looked up at a blinking amber light over the back doorway.
"We're still on alert after the jump," West said.
"Odd." A wave of sensation came back to Carson's leg as the medic pulled his gauntlet away. He sprayed disinfectant over the probe ends and retracted them back into their housing. Carson bumped her bad leg against her good one and felt only a pinch of discomfort. The medic kept his eyes on the data scrolling across the small screen on the gauntlet.
"Nanopolymer bioadhesion element. Set the brake easily enough. You'll feel some soreness for the first 6 hours. Light duty recommended for the first day."
"I thought it took almost 2 days for the polymers to fully kick in," Carson said.
"Last generations, that's correct,"
Moretti said.
"You haven't been in the field for a while."
The medic's last statement had a tinge of accusation to it. The Pathfinder Corps prided itself on being at the fore of any military operation and lighting the way for science and exploration. To be behind the lines earned a number of nicknames: Pogue, Slacker, REMF.
"I was riding a desk at Camelback HQ," she said. "Not by choice. Any other new gear I should be aware of?"
Moretti took a small pill bottle out of his case and handed it to her.
"Motrin and water," he said.
"Some things never change,"
Carson said. She slid off the table and took a few steps. There was a twinge in her now repaired leg, but she could walk normally.
"We'll get you fit in bias gear," West said. "I've got you berthed in his..."
An alert tone chimed, and a voice came through the speakers in the ceiling.
"Chief Carson!" Contact the bridge, Director Hale said. Repeat, Chief Carson, contact the bridge.
Carson looked down at the screen on her forearm and saw that it was badly cracked. She tapped it twice and it gave off a dying buzz.
Figures,
Carson said.
Wes, do you have...
The sergeant handed her a data slate already keyed into the ship's commo network.
Thanks.
The disheveled appearance Carson saw on the screen's reflection wasn't going to make the best impression on the director. She hadn't spoken to him face-to-face for years, but this was not how she wanted to get reacquainted. Even so, she couldn't help the anticipation welling inside her. Serving with the colonel, his rank in the Pathfinder Corps before he retired for this mission, had been one of her lifelong ambitions, despite their rocky past. She swiped a finger down the screen and established a link to Spirit's Bridge. The screen changed. Carson recognized Marie Hale as she spoke to one of the bridge crew. Ken Hale appeared a second later.
Chief Carson, said the war hero, shaking his head slowly like a disappointed parent. It appears as though you are in one piece.
She felt her cheeks flush slightly.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. And I'd like to say that I'm excited to be part of this
later. At the moment, however, we have a situation developing that requires the onboard Pathfinder's specific skills. And as you're the only commissioned Pathfinder on board, the mission falls to the team.
He said, the team, Carson thought, not my team. Yes, sir, we're ready.
We've arrived in the Terra Nova system. However, we've not raised anyone from the colony, and it appears that most, if not all, of the orbital stations are offline. Dark protocol is in effect.
Carson felt a chill in her heart. Dark protocols were only used when a colony was suspected of being under attack. The last time Pathfinders had gone on that kind of a mission was after the Caledonia massacre. Carson exchanged a confused look with West. The Terra Nova system had been settled for over 15 years. Surely there was someone on the planet that would be trying to communicate with him. The arrival of the fleet should have been a momentous occasion for everyone in system, not just for the newly arrived colonists. Hale continued, seemingly oblivious to Carson's confusion.
It's going to take several hours for the fleet to spin up and move into orbit, but we need to get some eyes on the ground and make contact with the colony. We've got 40,000 colonists waiting to make landfall. I've got a mule crew prepping a bird on the deck where you landed. It's a slick, no turrets, so don't count on any air support. Their wheels up in 20 minutes. Head down to the surface and find out why no one is answering the phone.
Yes, sir, but how?
I don't have any answers for you, Chief. You have your marching orders. Contact me as soon as you've made contact with the colony. Maintain calm security. Hail out.
The slate screen went blank, leaving Carson staring back at her reflection again. She set the slate aside.
Sergeant West,
Carson said, stepping around the man and going to an open locker.
I want the team kitted out for recon. Can we make that in wheels up time?
West spoke into a microphone on the back of his gauntlet hand.
We're Pathfinders, ma'am. No one waits on us, she said. Visor is set to factory standards. We can get it dialed into your frame on the way down.
Carson pulled a Gauss carbine out of the weapon rack and slapped in a full magazine.
I like the way you think, Sergeant. Pathfinders light the way, she said.
That we do, ma'am.
Carson felt the deck of the mule's cargo bay sway beneath her feet as the shuttle banked in the void. She'd barely gotten to know the Enduring Spirit before hopping on another mule and leaving almost as fast as she'd arrived. In the center of the cargo bay, four Pathfinders crowded around a case bolted to the deck, picking out bits of equipment and attaching it to their armor or stuffing it into small sacks attached to their lower backs. She recognized two, Moretti and Nunez. One of the others was a young woman with red hair and Slavic features, mumbling to herself as she completed her kit. The other was a tall, powerfully built man with a slight bulge on his back from a drone carrier. West stood near Carson, his eyes locked on the holoprojection of a person with their arms held perpendicular to their body. He rolled one hand forward. Carson shrugged her shoulders forward. The armor plates of her Pathfinder armor slowed the motion, then she felt the pseudo-muscle layer beneath the composite layer squeeze against her chest and arms. The layer just over her skin was proof against vacuum and most extreme climbs, and could triple her strength when needed. Her armor wasn't designed for sustained punishment, but for long-duration missions in austere environments. The Strike Marines wore larger up-armored suits into battle and carried more powerful rifles. That was what Strike Marines did. Kill people and break things. Pathfinder missions varied from search and rescue to reconnaissance to more mundane things like escorting scientists with the field acumen of potatoes through alien ruins. Her armor could get her through a fight, but if she wanted to go charging through a hail of enemy bullets like the Spirit's commander was famous for, she wouldn't live long enough to regret it.
Up a body sink check.
West pointed to the deck and Carson squatted down. The armor plates on her chest and back swayed as she felt the pseudo-muscle layer tighten against her thighs and midriff. The plate snapped against her body as she stood up, barely feeling the weight as her armor took the stress off her body.
Lowest sink check. Give it another 30 minutes to work itself out. Might pinch a little until then, West said.
Carson worked her shoulder blades. For as much as the Pathfinders took pride in their armor, the engineers had yet to devise a suit that didn't itch right where she couldn't scratch it. West slapped his gauntlet screen twice and held his arm out to her. She twisted the wrist of her gauntlet to activate the data ports and tapped her arm against his. Data flowed into her onboard computers.
We've got a good team, West said. Moretti you've met. He was on track for a commission in med school when his enlistment was up. Colonel, excuse me, Director Hale handpicked him for the team and the colony. He's one of the better field medics I've come across.
Wonder if he learned some more bedside manners at the university, Carson said.
Yeah, he's got a chip on his shoulder about something. There's nothing in his personnel file to explain it, West said. Nunez was top of his class during selection, high marks in geology and planetary science. Would have won honor graduate, but he did something to piss off the cadre, and they almost didn't let him on his wings.
Any idea what?
She asked.
Something involving a stolen air car and the Dotari ambassador's liquor stash.
At least that's the best I can put together.
I asked 5 different contacts at the selection course about him and got 5 different stories. He's rather tight-lipped about the incident, but does well in the field.
He and Moretti were on the same team during their probationary period. Their team chief was a bit salty when she lost them to the mission.
I take it the redhead is our communications specialist?
Carson asked.
Correct. Popoff. Her parents are in the colony, higher-ups in the construction division. Since there's no going back to Earth, Hale gave preferential treatment to whole families that wanted to join. She's fresh out of selection. So fresh, they rushed her through the last 2 months to get her onto the team.
She did the Land Nav Star Course, Australian Survival, and rated master in her specialty in 2 months?
Carson asked.
Motivation, West said. She's dropped a few hints that her parents might have come on the mission without her. If this were a normal team, she'd be on probationary status, and I wouldn't have suggested she make this drop, but we're not in the Milky Way anymore.
Needs must. He shrugged. The tall Pathfinder with the drone pack moved away from the equipment crate and went to one knee near the bulkhead. He planted his Gauss carbine in front of him and bowed his head in prayer.
That's him, isn't it?
Carson asked.
Yes, ma'am. Sergeant Carl Birch, our drone wrangler and the only Pathfinder ever awarded the Medal of Honor. He's not one for fame, which is one of the reasons he's volunteered for Terra Nova. No one here is trying to make him a poster boy for anything, West said.
The most famous Pathfinder in the Corps.
And me, Carson thought. The most infamous. What a match.
I read his citation, she said. Still hard to believe what happened to him. Lost his team on a rescue mission to recover a downed suit of armor, then dragged that soldier's metal wound through enemy lines. Jesus.
He keeps to St. Colin. I'm his patron saint, West said. The Chief Templar, Colonel Martell, even brought him to Mars after his award ceremony. Let him visit St. Colin's shrine. He's the only non-armor soldier that's ever been given that honor. He prays before every mission.
Is it true the armor call him Ironheart?
Ma'am, it's better to assume everything you've ever heard about Birch is true. He's modified his drones beyond standard specs, which is against regs, but they work so well that no one's ever told them to stop.
We've got a solid team. What about you, Master Sergeant? Why Terra Nova?
West's cheeks flushed.
I have a wife and 3 little ones, he said. I'm a plank holder. Left the Rangers to join the Pathfinder as soon as Director Hale started the program after the Ember War.
I was one of the first on Caledonia after the massacre.
West's jaw worked from side to side as he fought back emotion.
Saw enough death and destruction, he said. Terra Nova was away from all that.
Supposed to be away from all that? I missed enough of them growing up while on missions. Wanted my kids to grow up worrying about school and anything else other than an alien fleet showing up in the skies.
Worthy goal, Carson said. We'll find out what's happened to the colonists. Maybe they're not expecting us and forgot to leave the light on.
Hope you're right, Chief.
West took his helmet off his belt and twisted it on, then slapped a magazine into his carbine. Carson checked her armor. Feeling a slight pinch at her joints, she moved around the cargo bay. It had been over 2 years since she'd gone on a drop. The sheer volume of preparation involved made it a good deal more difficult than riding a bike again. She looked over at Nunez and saw a knife strapped to his chest.
How can I forget that?
She thought. Pathfinder knives, reinforced graphenium with a blade sharpened down almost to the molecular level, were a signature part of their gear.
West, she said. We got another Pathfinder special in that case. Mine was in my gear, which I left in another galaxy.
The team sergeant reached into the case and tossed her a knife in a molded scabbard. She caught it and examined the Pathfinder crest embossed on the butt of the hilt. She drew the blade and tested the balance in her hand. She spun it around, reversing the grip with quick fingers. The blade was modeled on the Strike Marine K-bar, a nod to Hale's background when he began the Pathfinders. This knife was factory fresh and not the same she'd received the day she earned her wings.
New start, she thought. New life.
She maglocked the hilt to her chest and sheathed the weapon. For the first time in years, she felt whole. Nunez slapped the side of his helmet and the blurry lines of his heads-up display cleared.
That the only thing I hate about new gear is working out all the bugs.
Across the Mule's Bay, Popoff removed a magazine from her Gauss carbine, then immediately slapped it back in. A green icon appeared next to her name on Nunez's HUD, and her voice came through his suit's IR.
Bugs!
Hell, they didn't even give us the chance to range test these things,
she said, the words carrying through to Nunez's helmet speakers.
They haven't had a factory fresh weapon yet that didn't jam. You always have to give them about 500 rounds to break in. I don't understand why the brass doesn't get that.
I swear we were more preoccupied with bringing everything on the enormous packing list than making sure any of our gear worked, Nunez said.
Sure, when the supply chain is thousands of light years long and with no crucible to link to it, it makes sense to bring it all with you. But even given all the years this mission was brewing, it still felt rushed in the last couple months.
That's just the truth.
His eyes moved to the icons representing Carson and West. They were in a private channel, both standing near the cockpit hatch at the front of the bay. He turned back to Popoff and motioned to the squad's leadership with a thump.
Just look at who they decided to send on this mission. Out of every candidate who applied for this job, why'd it have to be her?
The court-martial cleared her of any wrongdoing,
Birch said as he ran his blade down a whetstone. Moretti huffed.
Hard to convict anyone when all the witnesses are dead.
Hard to convict anyone if they didn't do anything wrong,
Birch said.
If that's the case, then why's she been riding a desk ever since the Belisarius? If Hale thought she was clear to return to duty after all those deaths, he would have let her back into the field, Nunez said.
First contacts are no joke,
Popoff said as she extended her carbine out with one hand, testing the optics through her HUD.
You really expect someone to just shrug something like the Belisarius disaster off? It's only been 2 years.
Some people take longer than others to process that kind of thing,
Birch said.
I saw how she arrived. Do a maneuver like that, and you're either incredibly brave or incredibly foolish.
Moretti grunted.
Or incredibly stupid.
Or some combination,
Nunez said.
She thinks she can jump on this boat at the last second and it'll wipe away what she did?
Moretti asked.
That sort of thing stays with you. Doesn't matter that the courts couldn't prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. They should have stripped their wings. The whole corps knows she's responsible for what happened. Cleared by a court-martial or not, I'm not going to forget about it.
If you're that pissy, why'd you patch her up so quick then? Nunez asked. Could've left her ass sitting in medical for a week while we do this drop with West in charge.
Moretti held up his metagauntlet.
I took an oath to do no harm. I treat everyone equally. My emotions and personal beliefs will never interfere with someone getting the best treatment I can give them.
Something we should all keep in mind,
Birch said, his tone carrying an emphasis of command and a hint of threat. Nunez coughed and sat back.
So, Popoff said, you guys ever done this sort of thing before? Dropping in on a dark colony in the middle of an unexplored dwarf galaxy that's supposed to be the second home to humanity?
Don't think anyone's ever done what you described. How many operational drops have you done, Popoff?
Birch asked.
One escort mission to Barada, which wasn't a drop.
She squirmed in her seat.
No combat? At all?
Popoff shook her head. Nunez clapped his hands.
Wait, Popoff, isn't your first name Cherry?
My name is Vishnaya, she said firmly.
Which is Russian for...
I said my name is Vishnaya!
She grabbed the edge of her seat and leaned toward Nunez. Stifling a chuckle, Nunez said,
Well, I guess this mission we're gonna pop off your...
She lurched out of her seat, but Birch grabbed her by the arm and pulled her back down. Carson and West looked over their shoulders, then turned their attention back to the cockpit. Popoff shot Nunez the finger.
You think you're real original, don't you?
Tough crowd,
Nunez said.
Man, I thought I'd won the lottery getting a slot on the Spirit. I'm starting to feel like I drew the short straw instead.
At least we've got an iron heart to balance the scales.
Hey, Birch? I can't call you that, right?
Are you armor?
Birch asked. Nunez patted himself, his chest, arms, and legs.
I don't seem to be inside a 15-foot killing machine.
Birch's silent stare was all the answer Nunez needed, so he turned his attentions to his gear, suddenly deciding to rearrange the grenades on his harness.
He's always like this, Moretti said, but you get used to him.
The shuttle jostled around them, shaking the pathfinders in their seats. An orange light came on and a female voice came through the mule's internal speakers.
Hang on back there. We're entering the atmosphere. Might be a little choppy.
Nunez grabbed the sides of his seat as they bounced again.
A little choppy, my ass!
Hate pilots that understate things. Gonna suck, say it'll suck. Going down in flames, just you start screaming!
Chapter 4 Carson stood just behind the pilot as the mule broke through the clouds over Terra Nova. Bright flashes illuminated the dark storm clouds as rain pounded against the mule's windshield.
That's not ominous or anything,
the pilot said. The name Greer was stenciled on the back of her helmet.
Could be worse,
Carson said.
We could be getting shot at.
Greer looked over her shoulder.
Don't even joke about that.
Carson looked past the pilot, trying to see the surface through the rain.
You sure the colony is down there?
X marks the spot.
Greer tapped her navigation display.
Colony's power grid must be down,
West said, just as they broke through the cloud layer and got their first view of the colony. Rows of multi-level prefab buildings were arranged in a grid, spreading out from the coast. A spaceport was situated at the southern edge of the colony next to several blocks of industrial buildings. There was no sign of any people anywhere. Several ground cars littered the streets, not parked, looking almost as if they'd been abandoned in place.
It's a ghost town,
Greer said. Carson couldn't help but agree.
Let's do another pass and take us to the spaceport. Clear that and at least Hale can send down more resources.
I don't understand where everyone is,
West said.
And those ground transports look like they've been sitting there a while.
Carson caught a glimpse of one of the vehicles just as they flew past and saw grass growing around it, reaching almost halfway up the sides. In fact, it didn't look like anyone had trimmed any of the vegetation anywhere in the city for months, maybe even years.
What the hell happened?
Greer asked. Carson slapped West on the shoulder.
Let's go find out.
She made her way back through the mule's cargo bay and punched the ramp control. An alarm sounded as the ramp opened. She grabbed the handrail above as wind and rain rushed in, buffeting against her. "Birch, let's get some eyes down there," Carson said, watching the building slide past. The drone wrangler appeared beside her and knelt on the deck, a hatch on his armored back.